We may not reduce the organisms present in the root canal to zero, but when the culture is negative, we at least have reduced the number of microorganisms to a point where they are less likely to survive and to cause a reaction to the periapical tissues. At some future time, if not immediately.
1261, you get 1261A. I don't know. Okay. Sorry.
Furthermore, a culture is a check on whether you've carried out what is termed today a clean procedure. And it's for this reason that I still use cultures, and also there is statistical evidence that the percentage of successful cases is approximately 10% higher when cultures are used and the root canals are not filled until a negative culture is obtained. Not from one study, but in my book, I would guess there are 8 different studies bearing this out, and there is only one study which states that it is not, it doesn't matter whether you get a negative or a positive culture before filling the root canal.
What is your feeling along those lines about work that was done by people like Sikransky that shows a huge variety of anaerobes that, unless they're cultured with carbon dioxide, you can't even pick up?
These are obligate or strict anaerobes. And strict or obligate anaerobes will die within a matter of minutes without an antimicrobial agent. They will die within a matter of a minute or two in contact with an oxygenating agent, either hydrogen peroxide or sodium hypochlorite, which we use in root canals. I am working at the moment with the organism that Sundquist relates to cases of periapical lesions, sound teeth that have been traumatized with periapical lesions, in which he found that one organism is perhaps more responsible than any other, and that is the melanogenicus. And we're having trouble growing this organism. We are using a medium on which it is ordinarily grown, consisting of either triticase soy or a brain heart infusion broth, to which is added minidione, hemin, and sodium bicarbonate. And I've been pouring plates and unfortunately getting negative cultures because no growth, because it takes about 15 minutes for me to prepare cylinders with root canal cements and embedding them in the agar containing the ingredients I mentioned. And we on I left on Thursday. On Tuesday, Dr. Roy Stevens, who is a dentist but who confines all of his work to bacteriologic research at our school, and I worked together, the two of us, worked together to cut down on the time. And unfortunately, I felt so bad on Wednesday with my cold. I had a subnormal temperature that I just did not get to school. And I left Thursday, so I don't know what the results are, but hopefully, by cutting down the time, we were able to get growth and a zone of inhibition from the root canal cements. So the obligate anaerobes are no trouble at all, because when the root canal is opened for the biomechanical instrumentation, they'll die off.
Let me get back to something you mentioned about OSPE introducing EDTAC. And I guess it was George Stewart that did quite a bit of work combining with urea peroxide and whatever in what we know as RC prep or endo prep. Could you go into that a little bit and your relationship with Dr. Stewart?
Well, I knew George as a dental student better than other students, because this was during the war. We were both taking the Red Cross first aid course. We happened to meet in front of the elevator one day and got to talking, and I learned that he was a student at Penn. So I naturally took a greater interest in him. One day, about a year and a half later, my allergist called me up to ask me what I knew about George Stewart, because he's been taking his daughter out and wanted to know what I knew about him, because it looked as if he had serious intentions. So I told him what little I knew, namely that I did know him personally, that he was a good student, a very pleasant person, but I couldn't tell him much more than that. At any rate, they were married. George went off to war. He was based on the Pacific coast, and meanwhile, his father-in-law died. His widow asked me about the time George was going to get out of the Army, what I could do about renting an office for him. And I went out of my way and this is almost personal.
You can put a restriction on it.
Yeah. I had the office next to mine made available by inducing, the person was a physician, by inducing him to take another office. And George's mother-in-law paid him a sum of money to do this. We broke the wall through so that he could use my waiting room. I had a large waiting room. And George and I practiced in this manner for a number of years. I needed an associate. And David Snyder was my first associate. And he was with me for 6 years. And at any rate, to make a long story short, George, I have felt toward George sometimes as a brother and sometimes as a father. Because George had no, George's parents were no longer living. And I still feel very close to George. And I think he has done a very fine job, both in the practice of endodontics and also in the teaching of endodontics. I think he is one of the best chairside teachers in the country. George is a very kindly sort of person. He has empathy for the student and goes out of his way to put the student at ease, even if a student makes a mistake, because George's philosophy is that. And by the way, I should have mentioned before, in addition to Bender and Seltzer, if I didn't, I certainly should have included George. Even if a student makes a mistake, George's philosophy is that this is part of the learning procedure. And, of course, he has done a fair bit of research also. And I feel very proud of these three men, Bender, Seltzer, and Stewart.
Could you comment a little bit on Dr. Stewart's involvement with the EdTech and the
EdTech prep? Well, I can't say very much about that. He has published a formula for it, and once you publish a formula, it becomes public property. Just as in 58, March issue of 1958, I published the formula for the root canal cement, and it becomes public property. Anyone can make it.
I was getting at more what led to his interest in it and the development of it. What led to his interest in it and the development of it?
Yes.
As we know it now, instead of just straight EDTA.
Yeah. He was interested in, or shall I say, Dr. Herbert Koeb, who was a microbiologist at Temple University, got George interested in a urea peroxide glycerin preparation, which is used in periodontics, and I can't think of the name of it at the moment. Well, it's an oxygen liberating
company.
Yeah.
I haven't got the name of it either.
Okay. And I think, I'm not sure, that from this, George got the idea of using the urea peroxide and the in combination with EDTA.
Was it glyoxide? Is that what?
Glyoxide. That's right. Yeah.
Another thing that you had touched on once or twice before, you mentioned Blaney and then Strindberg with their difference in success rates of overfills versus fills that were short. What is your feeling about the warm gutta-percha technique that Herb Schilder introduced that usually results in what he calls a little pop.
I'm sorry that you've asked that question. The reason I'm sorry is that Herb is, again, one of my very good friends. I respect him as a teacher. I respect him as a person who inspires his students. I respect him as an excellent lecturer. And I respect him as one who has done research on his own and with some of his graduate students. However, I'm not convinced that the warm gutta percha technique is better than the lateral condensation technique for these two reasons. A few years ago, one of our graduate students, Dr. Granite, was interested in determining or evaluating these two methods. And so I got funds for Dr. Granite to fly up to Boston to take Dr. Schilder's course and to spend a half a day in Dr. Schilder's office before he attempted to make an in vitro evaluation, in which he used upper premolar teeth, using one root for one method and another root for another method. And the result of the experiments was that there was no difference. And I thought, that's that. He wrote his thesis, and I always have a little compunction about having a student publish his work. And before any of our students are permitted to publish their theses, it has to have the approval of, number one, the head of the department, number two, if they've worked with a member of a basic science department, must have the approval of the basic science member. At any rate, this chap did not ask to have it published, fortunately, and it was not published. Last year, we graduated a student, a Dr. Brothman, Brothman, from Canada. He, a very fine student, he again wanted to do some work in this area, but he was going to do he was going to make sections differently from those made by Dr. Granite, in which he was to use a cryostat microtome, because if you decalcify tooth structure, it gets soft, and there's always a risk in cutting the section that there'll be displacement. But here, you can cut, for example, not only a cat's tooth, but you can cut a cat's jaw. At any rate, he was not going to do work in cats, but he was going to, again, repeat the experiment, doing 50 teeth, one upper bicuspids, one root by the hot gutta percha, and the other by the lateral condensation, and then section the teeth by means of the cryostat microtome. He examined 900 sections. He evaluated the method with the help of our biostatistic department. And according to the evaluation, there was no difference.
Okay.
Dr. Brothman requested that he publish his paper, and at the moment it's in limbo. I hate to see it published because I like Herb so much. And I have a feeling that he's applying pressure on us and probably will publish. I mean by that, he will have approval.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, did Herb Schilder take his training in your program?
No. Herb Schilder was in the Navy. At the time when we gave a one-day, a week course for 11 weeks, I think, or 12 weeks. 12 weeks, that's right. And he took the course over a 12-week period. Then he took a residency at Temple University.
I see. How long was the residency? That was a one-year?
1 year. It's quarter after six.
Okay.
I think I ought to go down.
Okay. Can I ask you one quick question?
Yes.
And I'll give you the option of answering or not answering as you see fit. The PBSC formula, PBSN formula, what are your feelings about that being taken off the market? I believe it was by the FDA.
No. It was never submitted to the FDA or to Council on Dental Therapeutics, to the best of my knowledge. No, I think it just died a natural death because the manufacturer found that there weren't enough sales after a while. And I think there weren't enough sales because the question of sensitivity came up every now and again. I do want to add something here. Mm-hmm. Today, Dr. Tronstad, after Dr. John Harrison gave his lecture, I'm sort of starting at the wrong end. I'll start over again. Dr. John Harrison gave a lecture today. At the conclusion of the lecture, he said that he confirmed he gave me credit for introducing sodium hypochlorite solution in endodontics and endodontic treatment. During the discussion, Dr. Tronstad got up and said that Alexis Carrel, introduced sodium hypochlorite, not Grossman. It is true that Alexis Carrel introduced sodium hypochlorite during the, I think, the First World War. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure during the first, yes, I'm quite positive, during the First World War, as a means of debriding war wounds by instilling the solution, flowing the solution over the wound.
Dakin's solution? Was it called Dakin's solution at that time?
No, Dakin's solution was an improvement on the sodium hypochlorite solution. In fact, it was called the Dakin-Carrel solution and then shortened to Dakin's solution, which was a chloramine solution, chloramine T. And chloramine is an organic salt. and gives up its chlorine very slowly. I am responsible for the introduction of the use of 5% sodium hypochlorite on the basis of experimental work done with a Dr. Miman, M-E-I-M-A-N. And I confronted, because Dr. Stromstedt made it appear as if Carell is the one who introduced the 5% sodium hypochlorite solution into anhedonic treatment, which is absolutely wrong. As a matter of fact, I'm responsible for introducing both the hydrogen peroxide and the alternate use of the two. First, sodium hypochlorite alone, which I called double chlorinated soda solution, and then later on suggesting the use alternately with hydrogen peroxide so that the effervescence would carry the debris out of the canal.
Okay, well, I cannot thank you enough. And as I said, I just spent an unbelievable amount of time with you.